This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, exclusive to football referees of all levels around the world. My name's Darren Cullum, I'm a level 5 referee with the Somerset FA, and my colleague and mentor is Somerset FA's County Training Officer and PGMOL Assessor Richard Mellon. Before we continue, I'm delighted to say that according to the most recent Google stats, we've now been listened to in 63 countries, so just like to say a huge thank you for your continued support. You can listen to us on iTunes, iPhone and iPad. Just search for Referees World and then click subscribe. Of course, it's free. And you can listen online through the website, refereesworld.co.uk, which is also where you can contact us from. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, at Referees World, and you can now like our Facebook page, which is called Referees World Podcast, where we'll be posting regular updates and news articles, plus answering some of the questions that you post. In this episode, we decided to sit down over a coffee in Richard's kitchen and start by going through some of the questions that you've asked. We also discussed the benefits of having a mentor, nipping half fouls in the bud before they escalate, the ways of dealing with a bad assessment when you thought the game was okay, and which referee, past or present, would you like to see on the new series of Strictly Come Dancing? It's all coming up in Referee's World.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
First question comes from Chris at Can They Score. He wants to know how we use club assistant referees in the south of England, because up here, they never seem to do the offsides.
That's an interesting question. I'm very much aware that around different counties, club assistant referees don't get involved to some extent as regards offsides.
It's purely down to the referee then?
It is down to the referee, but it is also what's promoted through the counties. I mean, I don't see a problem with asking club assistant referees to indicate offside. What's the purpose otherwise? If they're there, they're only going to give you ball in and out of play. Is that enough? And then I would say, if you're a level 7 or level 6 referee and you're not using your club assistant referees for offside, who is doing the offside? Are you fit enough to do offsides, Darren?
Maybe for the first half.
I think sometimes when the game is at full pelt, it's very, very difficult to be in the right place at the right time to make the judgment of offside. If you know from personal experience and all our listeners, when you're an assistant referee, you have to be in the right place at the right time to make the right judgment of offside or not offside. And if you're just a few yards out, it's just, you could make a cardinal mistake, you know, a key error of judgment.
What I remember about that game in particular was, because I knew I had a lot more running to do and I had to, I spent a lot more time concentrating on something that I wouldn't normally be doing. So there were other areas of my game that would be a miss because of it.
Let's go back a few months here, whereby we talked about pre-match instructions. Now, let's talk about pre-match instructions with a club assistant referee. Let's use our own personal experiences here and take the conversation a little bit wider and get guys thinking, will they ask for assistant referees to do offsides or not? You know, if you don't ask for offsides from assistant referees, why are you not asking for offsides? You know, who's going to cover them otherwise? And let me say to you, you can be the most fittest of all referees ever. But I say to any referee, you're not fit enough to do everything. And you can't. We can't. It's just not possible. So what are you talking to? What are you talking about when you ask club assistant referees, Darren? What sort of instruction?
I would ask them to do the offsides for me.
In what particular way?
I would ask them to wait for the ball to land before they make a decision, to have plenty of eye contact with me.
Right. Okay. That started the ball rolling, so to say. Let's look at club assistant referee, how much, what can I say, confidence have we got in his ability? He comes up to you, he's a 45-year-old, 50-year-old, just helps the club out. What's his knowledge? How do you find out about his knowledge and his experience? How does he turn up? Is he turning up in a pair of wellies, turning up wearing a pair of boots, or just turning up wearing a pair of decent shoes because he's been asked at the last minute to do it? You've got to gauge the capability of the assistant referee. Ask him a couple of questions. You don't want a lecture. If you have a lecture with a club assistant referees, they think they've got a fussy referee. But what you want to establish is their competency. Does he do it every week? Has he turned up with a pair of shoes this week because he's forgot his boots?
I was going to say, actually, most teams, in my experience, will say, oh, we've got our lino. He comes with us every week. And I think you can tell if that person, particularly in the first 5-10 minutes of the game, you know if that person has done it.
Yeah. I think when you look at the guys that come towards you and offer their services to be a club assistant referee, it's a very telling time there, just prior to kickoff, as regards, you know, how they approach you, how you reciprocate their approach and the instructions you give them. Personally, my idea of how a club assistant referee can help me is I like to say thank you very much for offering your services. I hope you enjoy the game. And if they're a substitute, which in some cases grassroots assistant referees are substitutes, I said I hope you do get on and you're able to enjoy. So you get them working with you with simple pieces of
positivity.
Positivity. You know, they go out there having received some instructions and they feel part of the game rather than detached from the game. Because if they're a substitute, they may not have the right frame of mind. They may feel they've been in, been done
demoted.
Done an injustice by the manager, or I should be playing instead of Joe Bloggs, and things like that. So the instructions you give to the assistant referee, ball in and out of play, that goes without saying. But having made that comment, you still need to cover it. Yeah. I rely upon you entirely for ball in and out of play. I'm never going to be in the best position every time, but I would ask you to make sure that you monitor from a position credibly ball in and out of play. I wouldn't ask you to give me free kicks for infringements unless they're behind my back and it's foul and it is serious foul play, which I want you to bring to my attention. That's the only time I will ask you to give me free kicks. Otherwise, I will control all free kicks and penal offences. Yeah. Offsides, if you want to get involved in offsides, I don't mind accepting your flag. All I would say is, please make sure that the person that you're going to flag offside is the guy that's receiving the ball and he's clearly in an offside position when the ball was played. Are you happy with that? You ask the question. Having made the statement, you ask them the question. This is what I would like you to do. If you want to get involved in offside, and then you go through that and say, this is what I want you to do. If the ball goes to a player on the right wing and the player in the middle is offside and you put the flag up, I will ask you to put the flag down. Do you understand what I'm saying? You ask for clarification. You give them the instruction and ask them to clarify their understanding. Do you understand what I'm likely to do? Because that's what you're saying. Some of our colleagues, I know, actually give an instruction to the club assistant referees at the same time as talking to the captains just before kickoff. Mm. Good idea or not?
I wouldn't do that. I would generally try and sound out who the club assistant referees would be first, have a little chat with them, find out what their level of experience of doing it actually is, and then I would call them to the centre circle at the start of kickoff anyway, just so that everybody else can see. And I would say to the captains, look, I have spoken to your assistants, we're on an evil peg and this is what I'd expect from them. Are we all happy? Yes.
Okay, you're using trust there, Darren.
Yeah.
You're using trust. Perhaps. You know, let me turn it another way around and say to you that you've got the club assistant referees there and you've got the captains. You've just blown for the captains to come to the middle. Just say, right, guys, just listen to what I'm going to ask for the assistant referees. And then you give your quote to the assistant referees. And the captains then have a clear transcript of what you've said. They know exactly what the assistant referees are expected to do. And then if you have the reason to put the flag down and say, no, thank you, I don't want that offside indication, the captains will understand what you're doing. They may not agree, but that's another issue. You know, that's the benefit of talking to the assistant referees in front of the captains. It's not that you have to do it, but sometimes if you're trying to sell your decisions and set things up, you might want to consider giving instructions to the assistant referees in front of the captains. But all I want to say to my colleagues is don't take too long at kickoff.
Yeah.
Players are keen. They've been out there 5 minutes kicking the ball around. They are now chomping at the bit, waiting to get on with it.
Yeah.
You know, and so consequently, you've done all your preliminaries. Get the essentials out of the way. That's including the assistant referees. Then do the toss with the captains. And then off we go. Blow the whistle and happy days.
There you go, Chris. Hopefully that will answer your question. This is a question from Aaron Williams. Says, I was refereeing today and there were no changing rooms as they'd been locked up by the council and nobody else had keys.
We've all been there, Aaron. It's just an awful situation to have. The only thing I would sometimes say to my colleagues at grassroots levels. How do you arrive at a game? Do you go with your kit on underneath a tracksuit? To make it ease of getting ready for the game, especially if you have this situation. I mean, I do recall having the same situation quite a few years ago, turning up for a Sunday morning game, 10:30 kickoff at 10 o'clock, nobody's around. You know, they don't arrive, the players don't arrive until sort of 10 past 10, quarter past 10, and, you know, and within minutes they're ready to go, and they might have got changed in the car.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that would be my piece of advice. You know, you might not want to go with a pair of slacks and a nice polo shirt on if the changing facility is not going to be open.
It would also depend on the standard and the level of football you're playing at, because at a higher level, then you wouldn't, that just wouldn't happen anyway, would
no.
it?
No, it's just not acceptable at the contributory and above. Yeah. You know, it's just not a no-no, that.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
It's the Referee's World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. You can follow us on Twitter at Referee's World. You could email us through the website www.refereesworld.co.uk, and of course you can listen through iTunes. Just search iTunes for Referee's World and subscribe for free. Right, moving on then. Don't forget, we've got these random suggestions of yours when we post on Twitter. Who would you like to see on Strictly Come Dancing? Which referees would you like to see doing their little twinkle toes manoeuvres? But let's move on to something that Gus Poyet, Brighton manager, has piped up with in terms of looking for a consistency in referees. Rich?
Yeah, Gus Poyet wasn't happy with a decision made by Pete Wharton involving the game away at Southampton, whereby play was continuing towards the penalty area, still outside by a couple of yards. The Southampton player was fouled, but the free kick was given inside the area, and obviously it became a penalty, and it was just the wrong decision. And now Gus Poyet has come out and said he wants punishment for referees to be more transparent and publicly announced.
So what kind of punishment would he be referring to then? Because surely these situations are dealt with anyway, but they'll be dealt with behind closed doors.
They are dealt discreetly, and I think correctly it's dealt discreetly, because Pete Wharton, along with all our select group referees, are working at the top end. It's a very, very harsh business in which they work in. It's very competitive and demanding. And to go along with the idea that punishments should be announced to the press for release, I don't think that's a very good idea at all. I mean, imagine one of our referees has not made the correct decision, and let's use Pete Wharton because that's the name we've already mentioned. Pete Wharton made an honest decision. Like all referees, it's an honest decision. And unfortunately, at times, we make the wrong decision. We do make errors. You know, I can't defend that. And, you know, we're all guilty of making errors. We don't like it, but that's what happens. Now, Pete Wharton gave a penalty for Southampton against Brighton, and Gus Poyet didn't like it. So now Gus wants Pete Wharton name pilloried, lashed, cat of nine tails. He wants everything. It looks as though he wants the referee humiliated. Yeah. And I don't agree with that. And I don't think our peers at the FA or the PGMO would agree with that in any way whatsoever. So consequently, whilst I understand what he's looking for, I think his comments were made in the heat of the moment. When a referee does have not a good day at the office, he does pay a price. He doesn't get fixtures for the next week or so, and that might be a midweek fixture and a Saturday fixture. He'll appear in competitions lower down the ladder. He might appear as a fourth official, but he's not put out there again as a referee if the decision he's making is of the below the level expected.
And this, of course, is on top of the punishment you yourself as the referee give yourself, because there is nothing worse. You know when you've had a bad game, and you're your own worst enemy when it comes to that kind of thing, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. We've
all been there.
We beat ourselves up furiously, and sometimes I think we're too deep in our thinking at times, and you know, that's just what we take it on board with such immense pride. We make this the slightest error, we're beating ourselves up, and I think sometimes we overdo it, and I think we should relax a little bit more, self-analyse with a colleague And discuss issues, and some issues you don't want to discuss. I understand that, but I'm sure the majority of colleagues would benefit from talking about their match incidents.
This kind of moves us nicely on to an area that we wanted to talk about, and that was having mentors and using mentors. I have been refereeing since 1997. I had a period where I wasn't in the game, and then I got back into it sort of a couple, two or three seasons ago, and I was just plodding along by myself, and then it was suggested to me about getting a mentor, and then that's kind of how you and I hooked up, really. And I cannot stress now the importance of having had a mentor, particularly one like Rich, for the last sort of 12 months, I guess, and how much it can help improve your game. Because like I say, I used to just plod on. I used to go to my games, come away, didn't really have that many people to talk about it, maybe look at some of the forums or whatever. But to have somebody that you can pick up the phone to, or to come to your games as well, and to give you some analysis on your performance, is worth its weight in gold. It really is.
Yeah, I think the value of mentoring and coaching, whichever way you want to look at it, because I believe they are both very, very similar. I mean, some people use a mentor just to sort of make contact and, this is what happened today, what do you think, and talk through things like that. But with coaching, I look for a bit more specific development with coaching, and let's talk about the coaching that you and I do. We're talking about different aspects of the game, which wouldn't be something that we'd probably discuss as a mentor and a referee.
Right.
So what are the latest things that we've been discussing and that you've put into your game, literally on the game that you did a few days ago?
I concentrated on signalling. In the last game that you came to, one of the things you picked up on was sharp signals. It's a green ball, it's a red ball, that kind of thing, arms straight out. I worked on that, made a conscious effort with that. Unfortunately, my advantage signal didn't work as we'd hoped.
You still have the foreign referee's advantage signal.
I gave two, what I considered to be two reasonably good advantages, but my arms were up in the air again. And as soon as I did it, I thought, right, I'm glad Rich isn't here because he'll pick me up on that straight away.
Okay, let me just recap on that. I asked you referees, can you run with your arms up in the air?
Yeah.
How comfortable is it running with your arms up in the air trying to play the advantage? Where is the most comfortable position for your arms to be whilst you still run?
Right out in front of you.
Yeah. So why did you put your arms up?
Because I don't know. This is going to be one of my bugbears now, isn't it? This is going to happen. It's going to be one of those things that's going to come round and round again. But yeah, I mean, that's something that I've consciously made an effort on, being a lot more vocal and cutting down on the half challenges.
Okay, talk about half fouls, half challenges, Dad, so the listeners understand what you're looking at.
Okay, the way I would use the half fouls, particularly in the recent game that I did, this is a Boxing Day game. It was a local derby. It was a game which generates a lot of interest and has quite a big crowd considering the level of football it is. It's county league level, and I think the official attendance was 482. So that's quite a lot considering the level of football that it was at. And going into the game, I was conscious of certain areas, including the history between the two teams, the previous scores, who would be out to want to have the bragging rights on this particular game. So there was obviously an element that it could get a bit choppy quite quickly. So the half fouls, where I'm trying to go with this, is those things that probably a bit reckless, a bit careless, that could be let off, but the more you let them off, the more it's going to escalate the game. So if I bang the half fouls in straight away, it kind of cuts down on what could potentially turn into a bit of a nightmare situation. Is that the right way of describing it, or have I just gone the long way around?
No, you're almost there. But what I want to say is a half foul. It's one of those fouls that is contact, but sometimes you might not give it. But sometimes I think you need to give it. So you're controlling the tempo of the game. If you allow too many half fouls to accumulate in such a short space of time, let's, in one half of the field of play, there may be five or six passes. And within those five or six passes, between that team, the opposition are making bodily contact in a way that you think, oh, that's close. If he'd done that, then I'd have blown the whistle. Let me say to you, if you're thinking that way, then what you've got to do is stop the one that is going to be the foul that, ironically, if you had blown up for the previous one, it would have stopped everything from escalating. So you're stopping accumulation of half fouls that become a big foul, and possibly you might have a sanction to apply, a yellow card or a red card. And then when you hear players say, well, referee, if you'd given that free kick there, and you know what he's talking about, that's a possibly a half foul. So, you know, what you're trying to do is you're trying to gauge what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. You don't want to be fussy, but you want to make sure that you've got control. So consequently, pick a few half fouls out. Don't allow four or five half fouls to go unrecognised. You need to make sure that people are aware that you know, you're recognising the increased mood, the tempo, the contact between players. You know, there are contact fouls that we do allow, and the players expect us to allow. But there comes a time when you've got to say, hey, that's enough, guys. We need to stop this because it could escalate into something that could become retaliation, and it could become the ultimate sanction, which is what we could prevent.
What would you say to those referees that come out of a game having had an assessment and they feel as though the assessor has just torn them to bits, bearing in mind they're supposed to come away from a game having learned some valuable points, not to feel like they've been trodden on?
Okay, first and foremost then, if you've got that feeling as a referee that you think the assessor has just tried to rip you up, talk to your mentor. There's a simple answer. Talk to your mentor, get someone else on your wavelength and talk to them about it. Let the mentor have a look at the assessment when it comes in, but don't go, chopsing off before the assessment has actually arrived on your doorstep. It's a mistake when a referee feels that the assessor is not on the right wavelength and he goes out there after a game, goes to the pub, goes to the club after a game, and says, oh, I had Richard Mellon assess me today. He hasn't got a clue about what assessing's about and what the game's about. And then you rattle off about the assessor, and arguably when the written document comes in, which is an FA document, it comes in and it's all in there in chapter and verse. That is black and white. That is the fact. That is what you should be looking at as regards that. Please, colleagues, don't go out there rattling off about assessors before you've received the assessment. If you've got problems with an assessment, talk to your referee development officer, talk to your county training officer, talk to your mentor, talk to your mates in refereeing. Don't go talking to people outside of it. It doesn't help you. It's not helping development. And if there is an issue with the assessment, and sometimes there are, then the relevant bodies that you can take it back to and make an appeal, if that's what you want to do, they will have it reviewed.
Would you go directly back to the assessor and say, I'm sorry, but I don't agree with this section here?
That's a good question, Dan. No. I wouldn't encourage a referee to go directly back to the assessor. I would encourage the referee to go back to the assessing coordinators, go through his mentor, talk to the referee development officer, all those people I've already mentioned. But I wouldn't encourage a referee to go directly back to the assessor unless he was really good friends with the assessor and there was a good understanding and rapport. You know, it does happen that sometimes we get an assessment that we don't like the content of one particular item, you know, and you say, well, he's just not understanding why I did it. That's how it is. That's what the nature of refereeing is about. But let me say to you, making friends is easy, but it's even easier to get enemies through saying the wrong things at the wrong time. And I just want to say to colleagues, please don't go mouthing off, if I use that term very carefully, making the wrong comments at the wrong time when you haven't received the assessment. There is a formal procedure in which to follow.
This is Referees World. Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk or search iTunes for Referees World.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. You can listen online at refereesworld.co.uk, where you can also contact us through the website. You can listen on iTunes, just search iTunes for Referees World and subscribe for free. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Referees World. Right, we posed the question on Twitter recently, which referee would you like to see on Strictly Come Dancing? This is just for a bit of fun, really. Obviously, Strictly Come Dancing being the success that it has been in the UK for this season. But wouldn't it be funny to see what kind of footwork a referee could do? Sean Morgan Smith says, Dirks, short and stumpy, he'd trip over his own feet.
Identify who you say is Dirks.
Paul Durkin.
Paul Durkin, yeah.
Matthew Wilmot says Steve Lodge. Ross from refchat.co.uk, he says David Ellery. I think that's an inspired decision.
I think David would be very good at it.
He probably would, because he's obviously quite old school in a lot of his ways. And I think he's probably a seasoned dancer anyway.
Do you know David Ellery? I do know David.
Right, okay.
And I would not use the description to say David is old school.
All
David
right.
is very modern in his thinking okay. of refereeing. Although he's now retired from his active career and he's chairman of the referees committee for the FA, I know why you might consider old school, but no.
This is another one that's I think is a great suggestion. And I think would be a real character on something like Strictly. Colin Miles suggested Jeff Winter.
No, that's a big unit. Jeff Winter, when Jeff was refereeing, he was a big lad. I think Jeff's been probably retired for about 5 or 6 years now from the active circles.
A real character, I thought,
oh,
Jeff.
Yeah,
real
definitely,
character.
Definitely. There are a lot of characters out there. I know when they're on the screen refereeing, you don't see much of a character, but they are all characters. I generally believe that. And I'm looking at one or two other suggestions as regards who should be on Strictly. Steve Beresford is talking about Phil Dowd and Mark Halsey. Does that, as a pair?
Possibly, yeah. There's a can of worms.
Yeah, I'm not so sure which one of them will look prettier with a dress on.
Brilliant.
Dress and sequins for either one of them.
Sleepy Nick says Lubos Michel?
Yes, I cannot remember the nationality of Lubos, and I'm not going to guess because I could be totally wrong here. But yeah, a good referee as well from overseas.
All right then, Rich, who would you like to see?
Ian Blanchard.
Go straight to the top then.
Yeah. Ian Blanchard, Ian Blanchard definitely, and I'd like to see Roger Vaughan on there. Roger Vaughan, Twinkle Toes, you've got to be on there.
Okay, that's just about it for the Referees World podcast for this episode. Just a couple of other things that I'd like to mention. Adam Crafton has been in touch with us to say that he's done some interviews with David Ellery and Jeff Winter, and they're on his blog, which you can look at, and the address is right there, right now, 21. blogspot.com. Also, just like to mention the guys at refchat.co.uk, Ross and all the team there. If you've not actually been to the website, have a look. It's a really good little forum where a lot of great discussions take place as well. Also, if you struggle listening to the Referees World podcast online on our website, they host it as well, so you can listen to it there.
The download is complete.